You've invited me here. I've been invited here by Pastor Gary to lead you in a Passover Seder. So you'll have a table full of important things in front of you. We've prayed. We've done a song. The candles are lit. And the idea is that this is now a sacred, special time. And, you know, we pray. We say grace before meals. We have communion. We try and become very reverent and focus on the Lord. But it's not just an ordinary meal. Okay, there will be a full meal here, from what I understand, before we're all done. That's great. And it should be fun and enjoyable. But the Passover Seder, I personally think, should go from reverence to sort of a self-debasement, actually, to a rejoicing that you're free from sin and free by the grace of God. And a big part of that is looking back to the Exodus. Looking back to the Exodus and trying to identify with the children of Israel as they were slaves, which is, I've found, really hard to do. And it's really hard to stop and, you know, really think back to when you were a slave. Most of us, you know, Americans, we don't like to think of ourselves as slaves. We have a hard time with the idea of kings, much less slaves. I mean, but this is all biblical. So to understand that you're looking back at the most important historical event that ever happened in the lives of the children of Israel. That was the most, it was the focal point for everything that they would come to understand about themselves, that Exodus event, okay? And that every understanding they had about themselves came from that Exodus, right? So that they were called to look back at that time and remember, even if they weren't personally slaves, what it was like to be slaves, right? Even if they were free people, free men and women, right? The neat thing about it is that because we're believers, because we're Christians here, okay, we can look forward to a second Exodus, a greater Exodus, as Jesus is a greater Moses. And then we're looking forward to a new Exodus. I don't know what your personal view of the end times is and your personal eschatology. I'm sure we got all kinds of different people here, all kinds of different ideas. But the main idea that I would put in your lap there is that if this seems too kind of Jewish, right, for you, and that kind of you're not comfortable with it, think about a second Exodus, and I think then you'll be able to take hold of it, because then you're not just being freed from Egypt, and you're freed from sin and death completely, truly set free, like a greater Exodus than you can ever understand. So this whole meal is. It's kind of a paradigm. It's an example, a way to understand, hopefully, what will happen at the wedding feast of the Lamb, that he will have this sort of meal with us, right? And he says, I won't drink this cup again until I do so in the new Kevin, the new kingdom. So I'm going to say, you can, by all means, don't listen to me just talk and prattle on all night. If you have questions about anything, just shout them out. Shoot your hand up and shout them out. Yeah, don't shoot. I said shoot. Okay, don't shoot me. Just shout them out, right? And I've got some outlines here. This is what I gave to the people at Adat Yeshua for. It's called a simple Seder. Right now, if you really wanted to go to town on this, the Seder is kind of like Thanksgiving in a lot of ways. Right? It's a big spiritual Thanksgiving that you've been set free. If you really wanted to do this, you should feel like you can do this in your home. Don't ever feel like, oh man, I'm not Jewish. It's not Jewish enough. I don't know that the strange Jewish things. Just take ownership of it and Christianize it. Do that. Just take ownership. Don't feel like, in fact, I don't know if some of you saw, there's an article in Christianity Today that kind of frosted me personally, because recently, maybe you haven't read it, but maybe you have, but it was written by a couple of Jewish guys, not Christian Jews, who said that people like myself shouldn't go and bring Christian seders to all the churches because they're doing it wrong, and it's cultural appropriation or something. Well, that's exactly what I'm going to do, is I'm going to hand out to you pieces of paper that if you ever want to do this in your house, do it your own way, okay? Don't feel like, oh, I'm not quite Jewish enough to do this. So I'm going to hand these things out. It's just called a simple Seder. I'm going to go through exactly this. On one side, it's everything you're going to need, everything you need. On the other side, it's everything that it's the order of things. So here you go. So, okay, as I said, as we go, any questions? I can't guarantee I'll have all the answers. If I fake it, you know, hopefully I'll fake it enough to be convincing. So this book here that I'm holding is called a Haggadah. This is kind of the order of service. What you have on the back of that paper is this, just in bullet points, except that I put Jesus at the center of it. This is just a normal Jewish Haggadah. I was invited to do a Seder at the Annunciation Catholic Church the other day, and I told them that if they had asked someone from Temple Albert or from Bnei Israel, they would have gotten different emphasis, but they wouldn't have had Jesus at the center of it. You cannot, well, you could probably find Messianic Haggadahs if you want, but just take that piece of paper and take a few copies of it. And like I said, on the back is the order of service. On the front is what you will need. Okay. So, yes, sir. It's this book right here. Oh. It's just a book. It's a book of order. And the word Seder means order. So the big part of this is that because of the way that it's been kind of built up over history, that unlike at a normal meal, everybody does everything at the same time, you know, until you get to the main meal part. So, you know, I don't just turn you loose to, okay, you drink the cup and you try the parsley and you try this. Everybody does, you know, the same thing all along the way. And in fact, in Hebrew, the word order is used by every waiter and waitress in Israel. So if you were to go to, you know, some, you know, McDavid's or something and order hummus or, you know, on a Big Mac, they would come over and they'd do what waiters and waitresses do. They'd ask you, is everything in order? And they say, beseder, right? And so actually, that's a good word to say. Seder, can you say Seder, right? Let me hear it. Seder, good. You're going to learn some Hebrew in heaven, right? You realize that. You're going to get up to the heaven, and you'll be there, and St. Peter at the pearly gates is going to say, ah, shalom, hakol beseder, yesh neshek, which means, oh, you're going to look at it and go, oh, what does that mean? You know, fortunately, you have all, it means, hello, how's your peace? Do you have a weapon? That's what that means. Yesh neshek, and you're, so he's going to tell you, fortunately, you have all eternity. He's going to say, oh, Hebrew 101 for you, if you don't understand that. So, all right. Passover is a really, really highly teachable holiday. There's a lot, because of a lot of stuff that I just said. Okay. Normally, it takes place in the home. As I said, it looks back to the Exodus, but it looks forward to a second Exodus. I don't know what holiday does that besides Passover. That's why I would suggest that you know, take some ownership over it. Your family can celebrate Passover in a way that helps you live out this passage I have here, which you know, Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 9. We recite this at Adat Yeshua every week. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. That's the main thing. Impress them on your children, right? And I'm a dad. I know what it's like. I mean, those of you who are parents know what it's like to care about handing on a, not just a legacy, but having them take ownership of your faith, right? And this is a way of touching truth. That's what communion is, right? And the Seder is just an expanded version of the communion. That's really all it is. It's kind of like the full thing, right? Not that you're not missing anything in communion, but essentially what Jesus did is he took what was a household meal and made it public. Made it so that everybody can come to it. And it becomes sort of the great equalizer because everybody's welcome to the communion table, right? So if you were to do this in your home, what you would absolutely, absolutely need is the following things. The matzah, you need the shank bone. Traditionally, that's a lamb, but it can be chicken or whatever other kind of meat, hopefully kosher meat. And the bitter herb, the maror. Those are the three, right? If you invite a Jewish person over to your house, just don't do the pork, man. Just be. I mean, if you don't do the, you know, fine, have the pork. But if you do, you know, they're gonna pork. You don't know what you're doing, right? But all this comes out of Exodus chapter 12. If you have your Bibles, you can flip there. But I'm not gonna make this like a big long Bible study. So I'm just gonna kind of read it real quick. It says this is the Passover. Now the Passover is the night in which the 10th plague hit the Egyptians, which we'll review all of that, right? It says in verse 8, the night, that same night, they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire, along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. That's it. The meat, the bitter herbs, and the bread made without yeast. Everything else is traditional. So you may have seen on the internet or seen at other places plates sort of like this. They have whole plates with Hebrew words and all the different items on there. Okay, the only things that are actually biblical, are the things I just listed. The meat, the bitter herbs, and the matzah, the unleavened bread. Everything else on here, traditional. Some of it makes sense. Some of it, honestly, it's how tradition is. You maybe know how tradition is. We don't know anything about it. Like, for example, the egg. I don't know why there's an egg on. You get a million different rabbis with a million different opinions about why there's an egg on here. You know, maybe it's an Easter egg or something like that. Hey, who knows what? You know, the meaning of the life, or I'm not sure what it might mean. I need to. All right, I'll get closer. Cool, thanks. Okay. Is that better? Yes. A little better? Okay, I want you to be able to hear me. So you have on this plate here, you've got the egg, which is a big question mark. Okay, I mean, rebirth, Mother Earth, something. So broom the egg. Okay. The bitter herbs you have to have. This thing here called the chazeret is just a piece of lettuce to wrap the bitter herbs in. So they're redundant. It's redundant. Okay? But you do need the bitter herbs. The shank bone you will need, right? The haroset is the apple kind of mix that you have, right? You see that mix of apples and nuts and whatever else is in there? That's just sort of a sweet. It has symbolism, but it's, in terms of eating food, it's sweet to balance out the bitter, okay? And the karpas is the parsley, okay, which symbolizes the hyssop, which they use to paint the blood on the doorpost. And also we'll dip that in the salt water. So there's tears. So the whole thing about slavery should come to the fore. You don't need one of those plates. You can do it your own way, okay? So those are the three things you gotta have: the matzah, the shank bone, and the bitter herbs. I would suggest strongly that you do have the apple stuff because it'll help you if the horseradish just really hurts you. It actually doesn't even have to be horseradish. The maror just has to be something bitter. So you can go get wasabi if you want to, or go get those green chilies with like the meanest little seeds you can find and just mix all three of them up and make it painful. Do that to yourself, and now you're kind of, right? I mean, you're supposed to identify with the bitterness of slavery, so make it hurt. Make the maror hurt. And if anybody hasn't, I'll be looking for tears. You know, that's the idea. You know, it's easier than being a slave, okay? And the vegetable, of course, you're going to need. As I said, the egg is redundant. The piece of lettuce goes, you know, it's usually there too. But anyway, other important items, the candles, a wash basin. You should have some sort of washing basin and towels so that we can wash hands on your table. Make sure you have that. 4 to 5 cups of wine or grape juice. Now, we could have said, you really only need one cup. We could have refilled the cup 5 times. That would have worked just as fine, too. But I think everybody has at least 3 cups around, which is great. You should have the salt water. And as long as we have all that, I think we're ready to get going. Okay? So now, if you want to, you can turn over your page and follow along. Otherwise, the Elijah cup. Yes, I wasn't going to comment, but you caught me. It's a cup that, here's another thing that's interesting about it. I mentioned that the Christianity Today article is written by a couple of Jewish guys who are not believers, who said that Gentiles should not, you know, non-Jews should not appropriate this whole ceremony, okay, because it's been built up. And then their reasoning was that, well, Jesus never celebrated a Seder per se, because he didn't have, you know, this fully developed, you know, system that later on the rabbis would come up with. But the Elijah cup actually is representative of the idea that you have a guest, that if a guest comes, the guest can, you know, it's there for that person as a place setting. Also, the coming of Elijah as a messianic figure. But the first and earliest mention of any cup being used with this ancient ceremony is the Gospels, is Jesus. That is the oldest mention of it. So I would say it's important on that level, just to understand that the rabbis may have copied this from the early Jewish Christians, actually, later on. So hope that somewhat, okay, hopefully answered. Okay, so we have lit the candles. We've lighted the candles. We've said a prayer. We sang the praise song. We are ready now for the first cup, cup of sanctification, okay? So this is a cup where we're going to continue to set this time apart, holy time, not just a common meal, okay? So what you want to do is you want to take your first cup, hold it up in the air, raise it up, and I'm going to say a prayer that is so ancient that it may very well be the words that Jesus said, for all we know. Could have been. It goes like this, and you can repeat after me. Baruch atah Adonai. Eloheinu melech haolam. Borei peri hagafen. Right. It means, blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine. And with that, go ahead and have your first cup. Now, you can't just sip if you don't have to drink the whole cup. You may be running to the restroom later. That's the first cup, okay? Cup of sanctification to kind of get ready for this meal. Now we're going to move on to the hand washing. The hand washing. So I don't know how it's all set up here, but somebody at your table, you guys, actually, here's what you do. Look around the table and among yourselves in sort of a either democratic or dictatorial fashion, pick someone to be kind of the leader, the mama or the papa. Someone who's willing to take around to sort of do the legwork. There you go, right? I could, yeah. Yep. And take it around. They're going to go around. They're going to wash hands. They're going to help you wash your hands, okay? Now, you don't have to take a shower, a bath in it, but, you know. Nice, nice. Nice, nice. Looks like we're mostly getting through it. Okay, when you're done, take your seats. I'm going to read to you now from John chapter 13, and hopefully this will be very timely to what you just did. Okay? It was just before the Passover feast. Just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Now, I don't know if you've ever washed anybody's feet or had to wash other people, you know, had somebody wash your feet, but it's humbling, kind of vulnerable sort of thing, to use, if I could use that word, you know. I mean, You know, think about that. I mean, I have kids. I love them. I wash their feet happily, you know. But this is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords here. Creator of your feet. And, you know, imagine kicking off your sandals or boots and with stuff you've been walking around in. And here he is. He doesn't, you know, he could just kind of zap your feet clean, right? And poof, your feet are clean, you know. But the most powerful being in the universe washed human feet. Washed feet. That's a picture of servanthood. Servanthood. No doubt. So that's what he did on the night of the Last Supper, which was a Passover, which is what we're doing right here. Okay, okay, so moving on. Let's go on to the parsley. Get the greens, get the parsley. Somebody, whoever's the person in charge, and take it and make sure everybody has some. You're going to dip it into the water, into the salt water, and give it a try. And then look up and show me your expression on how yummy it is. Right? Let's see, it's making its way around. I see a few people. Right? How's that, eh? Right? Fulfilling? Good. Yeah, I could eat that every night. That's all I need, right? Just to is it? Now, good. Good. Not often that you just eat parsley with salt water, right? It's got its own particular taste and flavor, doesn't it? It really does have a taste to it, you know? And the idea is tears of slavery. And here's the rub here. Here's the thing. If you have a hard time identifying with the idea of being one of the Jews, you know, back in 4,000 years ago, slavery in Egypt, that's fine. If you have a difficult time, though, looking back on your own life before you were a believer and remembering when you were a sinner, and being thankful that you're no longer that individual. You're the same person, but you're not the same person. You know what I mean? You look back. How many of you, I know I can look back to a time I was 22 when I became a believer. I look back to that moment, and sometimes it really strikes me deep down inside that, wow, where was I back then? I was lost in my own mess, right? So that's the idea. If you can look back at that, this is the part where we go from reverence into self-debasing, where you really do consider that, yeah, I was a slave to sin. A slave to sin was, okay? Because, I mean, okay, then there's that big theological question. Well, am I a sinner or I'm a saint? Well, yes. Yes, you still have the sin nature, but you're no longer a slave to sin. A slave is someone who can't do what he or she wants to do. On any given day, you are chained to sin. Sin would be your master. In other words, you can't just get up and go do, you know, get dressed and do your own thing. You've got an agenda, and it's sin's agenda, and sin is telling you where to go and what to do. That's what it was like before you were a believer, before he set you free and changed your heart from the inside and turned you around completely. So that's where the tears come in. You think back, and it's not just tears of bitterness, it's tears of joy and thankfulness, gratitude that, wow, my whole destiny did a 180, and I'm headed in a completely different direction. I've got something real now, something meaningful, right? You're no longer that slave to sin. So I don't know if we talked about just that long enough. I'll bet we could probably come to real tears thinking about it, right? Thinking about what God has done through thick and thin, everything you've been through, the highs and the lows, as hard as challenging as it may be at times, you are at least free from your sin. Right? So that's why I think that part, this parsley and the salt water, I think is still important. more than the egg. I don't know what I'd tell you about the egg. Okay, so with that, let's move on to the matzah. Now, you should have at least three pieces of matzah on the table. Now, hopefully there's more in the back in case, because people are going to want to eat some. But whoever is the mappa or the papa of the table, go ahead and take the middle piece out. It's called the afikomen. Don't ask me why. I don't know why. Hebrew name, Aramaic maybe, Yiddish, I don't know. Yes. Take out that middle piece and break it. Don't eat it, but break it. We're all doing this at the same time. That middle piece. Very good. Just the middle piece. And you're going to want to take it and tuck it away and hide it. Or take that piece and tuck it away and hide it for later. Okay? All right. Now, some people, when they teach a Passover Seder, they will say that this is like Jesus' body going into the ground in the grave and then coming up later. But I'm actually going to read to you from Luke chapter 22. We will return to this broken piece of matzah at the end, at the very end of the meal, okay? And we're going to return to this verse here, Luke 22, 19, where it says, "And he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it." Well, you just said you broke it. Okay, we're not eating. We don't need anything. Go ahead. Saying to them, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." So we will return to that broken piece. For now, you just want to hide it away. Okay? Yes, sir. Nope, it could just be the one. That will be communion at the end of the meal. Okay, but it's been broken in the middle. Broken in the middle. Right, so yeah. Okay, you got it? This doesn't have to be perfect. We can color outside the lines here. If we, if you mess it up, you won't have to fast for 40 days or something like that. But we're gonna talk about the Exodus story once we do our thing. You got it, Tim? You got it? Okay. Yeah, break it, tuck it away. That will be for communion later, okay? His body broken for you. But before we do that, okay, because this was a Passover Seder, because the Last Supper was a Passover Seder, it would have been joyous, but also would have done what we're doing now. We're going to look back to the Exodus, okay? So, who knows the Exodus story around here? At this here Bible church. There's one person. Good. Couple. Right? Anybody? Right? All right. Cool. Yeah, from Sunday school. Anybody remember it? Okay. All right. Good. We have some kind of remembrance of it. Okay. So let's start not at the birth of Moses. Okay. Otherwise, we'll be here all night. But let's start at, the burning bush. Start at the burning bush. Okay. Who can tell me what happens at the burning bush? Okay, that's right. That's what happens, right? And then what happens after he has to take off his sandals? God spoke to him. And? Right. And God spoke to him. And then in the sequence of events, what happens after God speaks? What does God say? What happens? Oh, it's going to be a long night, isn't it? Yes. Go and it would let my people go, right? Right. So, you've seen Prince of Egypt, the movie, right? Okay, so what happens? And you go and let my people go. What happens then? Jay, this is a whole church full of people. Please, let's wait till somebody else must know this. But you're right. Okay, so what happens after that? He didn't want to go. Right. So what happens?
He said
they're not very good at speaking. So right, send someone else. And then what happens then? Right. Right. Exactly.
And then he said, "What did he say? Okay. So what should I tell the people?"
Right. Right.
Right.
Kind of had to nudge. Like you're going, right?
You. Okay, fine. I'm gonna send Aaron.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. It's a great story. It's kind of like saying, you know, okay, I want you to go and take, I want you to go fly to, you know, Iran and tell the Shah there to let my people go. And here, take this stick. You can do it. Right? I'm with you, kid. Go, right? So, right. So what happens then? They go, right? And where do they go? They go to Pharaoh. And what happens when they get to Pharaoh? He's right. Pharaoh says no, right? No way. Get out of here. And so what happens then? Zap. The plagues. Okay, right, the plagues. What are the plagues? Anybody remember any of the plagues? Wait. Now everybody's no lies. I heard somebody at a diet show say snails the other day. No. Hail, right? Frogs, right? Gnats, right? May have been scarab beetles because they worship those things, right? Yeah, like nasty. Right? Yes, yes. Boils, thank you. Good. Locusts, right? Yes. Rained fire, right? Yeah, extreme darkness that could be felt. Just, I mean, all this, right? And he finally gets to, what's the last one? Death of the firstborn. I had a child look up at me just yesterday when I led a Seder saying, well, and he told me in very serious tones that he said that if you don't let my people go, then I'm going to kill all these children. And so he said no, and then he killed all these children. You know, it let the gravity really sink in of what happens there. You know, people like think that's not a God. Would God really do that? Right. But I'll tell you, this is a big part of it here, because what it comes down to is it's like God saying to Moses, go tell that Pharaoh, he's got my son, Israel collective being my son. Let my son go, or I'm going to kill yours. Right? You think about it in that way, and it's pretty realistic. How many parents would do that? You better let my, you know, you're holding my son hostage. You're holding my son. You better let my son go now. Right? So Pharaoh brought that on himself because he could have said, okay. Sorry. That's quite all right. That's a great ringtone. That is a great ringtone. I don't even know what it said, but let's let her finish. All right. Actually, let me gather my notes here. So that is the Exodus, and there's a question in the Haggadah, this order of service, that it says, why is this night different from all other nights? Why is this night different? And in the Jewish tradition, there's all kinds of answers for it. But what it really comes down to is that on this night we remember we were slaves. That's what it comes down to. We remember we were slaves. Okay, that's why this night is different. So we're going to review the 10 plagues now. What you need to do is, we don't all have plates, so get a napkin, fold it up. This is kind of a Jewish thing. Maybe you do have plates. If you have plates, get your little plate out. Yeah. Oh yeah, pass the plates out. Very good. I see some. And get one of your cups of juice. Okay. And I'm going to tick off the plagues. And what you want to do is you want to poke your finger in the wine. This is one of these things. And you will put one droplet on your plate for each plague as I say them. Right? And you repeat after me. Okay, no problem. So get settled in, and we're going to recite them. Because we are, after all, at this point, we are looking backwards to the Exodus. So, about ready? Almost? So, okay, with the first drop, I say plague of blood, you say blood. Right? Go ahead and do it. I say frogs, you say, right, gnats, flies, you say, plague on livestock, you say, boils, hail, plague of locusts, plague of darkness, and plague of the firstborn. Plague of the firstborn. There you go. That was the first one I said, the plague of blood. Yeah, plague of blood. So, and you know, not the type of verses that you say, okay, yeah, I want to commit them to memorization, but you know, not usually the verses on the refrigerator, you know, for some reason. That's just, the Bible is just got gritty stuff that, you know, doesn't make it onto, well, it doesn't make it to Hallmark, you know, greeting cards and stuff like that. This kind of thing just doesn't. This is just too real, right? So we're going to go on to our second cup now. This is the cup of the plagues, cup for the plagues. So take your cup and raise it up. Take cup number two, and I will again recite that same prayer. It goes, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Borei Pari HaGafen. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine. And drink up. Okay. So we have remembered the Exodus. We've remembered the plagues, and we've looked back at that. We are now ready to start slowly entering into the meal. So we're going to start by tasting the matzah. So whoever's the head of the meal, break off a piece. Make sure everybody has a piece to try. This is the tasting part, you know. Pass it around. Okay, when you have it, hold it up and look up here. You have to hold it too high, but just look up here. All right, so I know I don't want to leave anybody behind here. Okay, now this one we have a different prayer. If you recite after me, it goes like this. Baruch atah Adonai. Eloheinu melech haolam. Hamotzi lechem. Min haaretz. Right, it means, blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who brings forth bread from the earth. Go ahead and partake. And with the Hebrew thing, you really got to get the going. And he'll come in handy in heaven. Right? You'll sound authentic. All right, and now... I'm going to say my favorite part, but the bitter herbs. So somewhere on your plate, somewhere on your table, you're going to have some bitter herbs. And I believe it's probably horseradish. So make sure you have a little piece of matzah, okay? And dip it in there and give it a try. Give it a try. Try a little bit of stuff, you know. Some of you may want to try a little teeny tiny bit. Some of you may be, you know, really robust and gutsy. I don't want you to get injured, but I don't want you to be a, you know, a Passover pansy. So make sure you try it. It should hurt. Go ahead and give it a try. Give it a try. Or you do have some grape juice you can chase it down with. If it, the longer you swish it around your mouth, you'll feel it. Oh, I feel it. Is it? Oh, yeah? Oh, good. Okay. Very hot, right? Yes. Ow, right? Yeah. It'll clear out the sinuses, won't it? That stuff. Yeah. This is like my fourth Seder this year. Right. Exactly. So how is it? How's it? Anybody? Yeah? Good? Some people love it. Some people like this stuff. It tastes good. Okay. Yeah? Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not so bad, right? Okay, and now that you've tried it, You chase it down with a little bit of the haroset, is what that apple mix is called. Try that too. The bitter and the sweet. The sweet will kind of be a balm for the pain. And you may find that if you take the matzah and the horseradish and the haroset together, that it kind of makes an interesting little, you know, combination. They kind of balance each other out. Good. Interesting. Right. I know. Interesting. And once you've done that, we are now ready to have the full meal. We're ready to have the entire meal. So I don't know what comes next. Okay. Is that the total? Is this it? Okay. No, we now have the full meal, if there is a full meal, if there's more. Yes. Is there?
Yes.
Okay, good. I didn't want to assume. Right. Cool. Yeah. So now ready to eat. After we eat, we'll pull out that broken piece, and we'll have communion together. And yes, Shankbone, I can talk about that. You're not going to eat it, but... You know. Yeah. Yeah, normally the meal, actually traditionally, you're looking in the Bible, it would have been either a lamb or a goat. That's why you have that bone on there, okay? But our Passover lamb becomes Jesus. He becomes the Passover lamb. He puts himself in the middle of it, and that's why you have that bone there. That's what it symbolizes. Okay? It now becomes a symbol more than anything else. So in a way, it's, as I said, like an expanded version of communion, you know, where we have just the bread and the wine, right? But it's an opportunity, I think, to touch truth, to handle, to hold, you know, it's like touching truth. Okay, so we probably have chicken everywhere I go. We usually have chicken, but you know, it could be lamb or whatever. But the idea is the lamb is symbolic of who he is. That bone sitting on the plate is symbolic of the meal he ate. And so, you know, I would encourage you to hand that thing around and touch it and think about it. There, you know, this is, you know, actual sacrifice, actual blood sacrifice here for our sins. I mean, oof. You know, he became the high priest. He also became the sacrifice as well. Is that, So with that, the meal's coming. Any questions or thoughts or comments or jokes? All right. I'm going to join you and eat, okay? So right, at the end, we will, as I said, we will have communion. So save a little bit of room.